Steve Johnson. I'm an alcoholic.
Absolutely.
Sam, thanks for the introduction. And Billy, thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here. I grew up mainly in Florida. My dad worked. My mom stayed at home. Pretty normal childhood as far as I can tell. I was always kind of a shy kid. Just, I don't know, that's just the way I was. Seems like, you know, pretty normal childhood up until middle school. My mom got breast cancer. We were all very concerned. Our church, we're really active in the church, and there was a lot of prayer for her. I was pretty scared, but everybody else seemed to have this faith that everything would be okay, so I went along with that. I just assumed everything would be okay, and it turned out that with treatment, she was okay, and she got past that. So ever since that time, this was in middle school, I felt like I had a pretty strong faith. I got active in my church and youth group. You know, felt like it was back on track. I was pretty active, played sports, I had friends. Somewhere in there, I had my first drink. I don't really recall it. I didn't have any overwhelming sense of satisfaction about it. All my friends seemed to think it was really great. I kind of went along with that, although it didn't make that much of an impact on me initially. Now, the first time I actually got drunk, that's a different story. We were having one of my friends was having a party, and this is more in, you know, early high school now. Yeah, I was pretty much an introverted guy. I had a few close friends, but not a lot of... Like, I knew everybody in the school pretty much, but I, you know, wasn't part of the in crowd or anything like that. But the night we had this party, all these people were at the party, and by my third beer, I was feeling nice and loose and was feeling uninhibited, and I was having a really good time. I felt, you know, I just felt like I was part of the in crowd, and I could talk to, you know, all these people that I had known but never really had a conversation with before, even the girls, and it was going pretty good until... You know, probably, I don't know, the eighth beer when I started vomiting, you know, and I was, you know, escorted to the bathroom, and I slept there in the bathroom all night. Woke up with a pretty terrible hangover. I don't recall how I got home, but I remember the next day my mom talking to me about, you know, she knew I had been drinking. And she said, you know, I drank like that one time and had a terrible hangover, and I never drank again. And I remember saying, I feel terrible, I'm never going to drink again. But inside, I was thinking, that was fantastic last night. I'm definitely going to be doing that again, because I just felt... so elevated and on par with other people. It, you know, it was a great thing. So anyway, that was the first time I got drunk. This is about the time when my friends were getting cars and I was getting a car, and that teenage rebellion, free spirit was upon me, and things were going, just seemed to be going okay. I was still, you know, introverted and just really shy still. But, you know, everything seemed to be okay, I guess. my mom's cancer came back as bone cancer, and I felt like, you know, this was just going to be a rerun, and that, you know, she was going to get past this. Although I knew I was older, I knew she could die, but I didn't think that was going to happen. God took care of us last time, and, you know, this, I just knew everything was going to be okay. We had a meeting with the doctors, and, you know, they said that she had, you know, less than 2 months to live, that her cancer had really progressed. She had been taking experimental drugs and everything else, and I didn't realize it was so severe until then. I started making a lot of deals with God, promises. I just knew that He wasn't going to let us down, that my mom just couldn't die. I couldn't think about that. And then she died. You know, it was, yeah, I was devastated, and our whole family was devastated. And you know, when that happened, I pretty much just turned my back on God, and you know, I knew God existed, but you know, it just wasn't gonna work out between us. You know, I was just gonna make my own plans and go about my own life, and you know, I had lots of friends that didn't have any. They didn't go to church or anything, and they seemed to be fine, so I thought, you know, there's, you know, I don't see the benefit here. I had a car, my friends had cars, and I had a job, so I had money, and we were, you know, we had been drinking on the weekends for some time, that continued. I'd often drive home very drunk, not remembering how I got home. I started using marijuana heavily at this time also. I was lost, you know. I had no motivation to do anything constructive. All I cared about was today. It was okay with me because I didn't have to worry about much else. My dad came and talked to me and told me that he wanted me to go to college. I wasn't really interested, but I said, okay, I'll put in an application. And I got accepted. And sometime later, or maybe just about the same time or even before, he told me he was dating somebody and that he wanted to marry this woman. And, yeah, I didn't like it, but I was like, you know, it's your life. You need to be happy. So I told him it was fine with me. So I graduated high school. My dad got married. We moved into stepmother's house, and I went to college at the end of the summer. And I was glad to be going. I was ready to start my life over. In North Carolina, far away from everything that I'd come from. I was just ready for a new start. I got there, and we were in this college introductory course where we just meet people and take these personality tests, and I'm taking this personality test, and I really wanted not to be introverted on this test. And so we got our results, and we were all discussing our results, and I said, you know, my test says I'm extroverted. And this room full of people that I didn't know said, no, you're not extroverted. You're introverted. And I was pretty upset with that. Not that my test result came back introverted, but that I, you know, was still the same guy. I was seeking change, and I hadn't changed at all. I got over that. I got used to the college lifestyle of, a couple classes every day, lots of free time, lots of drinking, and that's just how I went through school. I didn't really have to study too much. I got okay grades, and I had a major with classes that I was able to perform satisfactorily in. Even though at the end of my college education, I realized that I was picked the way wrong major and had no interest in it at all, and I was very anxious and fearful of graduation. Just that knowing feeling that I had made a huge mistake was with me for months at a time. And, but I was, still trying to have a good time with my friends, and we were drinking a lot, and, so graduation day comes, and we have all my friends and family in from out of town, out of state. We're supposed to be at the ceremony at a certain time because the show was going to start at, say, 9:30. Well, I just didn't want college to be over, and I stayed up drinking all night, saw the sun come up, decided that it would be a good idea to get a little sleep, and I woke up just a few minutes before the show was supposed to start, and I just ran around, found my stuff. I didn't know where I was supposed to go. All the information that I had received on graduation day, I just hadn't read it because I was not ready to move forward, or I just wanted to put it off. So I didn't know where to go. And, anyway, I found my classmates, and it was fine. I sat down, and they said, "Get up, let's go on stage." So I just barely made it. It was interesting. Anyway. So, now I've graduated, and I feel like, well, now I'm going to get busy with life, and once I get a job, I'm going to feel better. And I had these things come up in life for a long time. This is kind of a theme. I would see something that I wanted or something, and I would try to get that thing and think that once I get this, I'm going to feel better. And this nervousness, this shyness, this emptiness is going to go away. And it was always with me. I went back to school, got another degree. In 6 months, I got the degree, got married, moved out of state. I didn't feel any different. During that time, I picked up a new hobby of homebrewing beer, and I thought for sure that was going to change my life. And I guess it did, in one way or another. I was very enthusiastic about that hobby, and brewed as much as I could for a long time, and I think that's when I started drinking on a daily basis. I really wanted to enjoy the fruits of my labor and sample some every day. And I didn't think that it was impacting me. My wife was concerned about my drinking. I gained a lot of weight. Started having health problems that, you know, with my liver. And I was convinced that it was genetic or something. It had nothing to do with my drinking. You know, somewhere in here, I started taking antidepressants. At work, I would have panic attacks. And my drinking is it's progressing. Eventually, I was drinking not just every day, but getting drunk every day. On the way home from work, I just couldn't wait to drink at work. I knew exactly where I was going to go to get my beer after work. I had this feeling, that obsession, for a long time, but I never recognized it. I just knew that I was going this place and I was going to get my beer. So anyway, for a long time I was drinking 2 to 6 beers on the way home from work. Near the end, it was definitely probably in the 6 to 8 range, so I was pretty much drunk by the time I got home every day. And then I would drink even more at night. By this time I was hiding my drinking from my wife, because she was on me about that. I would take the case of beer around the side of the house, go in the front door, and then take care of that later. I could not drink enough beer once I started. I had this thirst that I just could not quench. It was like I just couldn't drink enough beer. It was incredible. At one point, I felt like the alcohol and beer was not affecting me. And I guess, I don't know, it was definitely delusional thinking, but I think that also speaks to the tolerance that I had. I could drink an amazing amount of beer. I started drinking during work. It's amazing I didn't get fired. I would show up late, take long lunches, leave early, take breaks to go drink beer, drink a 6-pack at lunch and go back to work. I just couldn't stand being sober. I couldn't even think about not drinking, not having beer sometime in my immediate future. I started having consistent blackouts. My wife would tell me that I told her, said something, and I couldn't remember it. I was paranoid. I thought she was making it up. I would wake up and all my beer was gone. I was convinced that she was waking up in the middle of the night and disposing of it. Really, I was just drinking it all every night. Somehow I finally figured that out. But I was just paranoid about everything. I thought people were watching me, people were talking about me. So my during this time. I couldn't be trusted to watch my kids. I have two little girls, and I would just pass out, and my wife would come home, and they'd be doing who knows what, you know. And didn't matter if we had guests from out of town, I would still drink that way. I just couldn't control it. That's all there was to it. I just couldn't stand not drinking. Although I did have a few periods of time when, you know, for whatever reason, I knew I was drinking too much, more than I should, and I wanted to stop. But, well, maybe I shouldn't say I wanted to stop, but I knew I needed to stop. And I could get not very much time, maybe a few days or a week, and I thought that was a huge accomplishment. And deserve celebration, and I would, you know, obviously drink again. My wife was getting pretty fed up with my behavior. I was spending a lot of money on this drinking. I was, deposit my check and cash out some money, so I had some money for drinking that, you know, was extra besides the money I was, you know, spending out of the checking account. I was always afraid I wouldn't have enough money to get the alcohol that I needed. I would get, you know, bonus checks and keep, you know, 70% of it for myself, just so I would have money to drink. That's just the way I was. That was what I was really concerned with. So anyway, my wife, she had had enough, and I was at the point where I just felt so empty inside. I recall one day, what I would normally do is come home after drinking, after work, maybe, you know, eat some dinner, and then drink inside if my wife wouldn't nag me too much, or go out in the garage. And so anyway, I was out in the garage one night evening, and just sitting out there, and this overwhelming sense of emptiness and, you know, just descended upon me, and it's just like, you know, is this all there is to life? You know, I just felt so empty. So, I guess I realized what I was doing to myself and my family, and I couldn't think about it. I couldn't face it. And that's when I really started drinking in earnest. So anyway, my wife had had enough of the lies and the stealing and, you know, all the things that I was doing. She wanted me to talk to somebody, anybody. And I did. And they suggested I get for treatment. So I went to the treatment place with my wife and talked both of them out of, you know, the idea that I needed any treatment for my alcoholism, even though I knew I was in trouble with alcohol. And that's when I was serious about stopping drinking, and I was going to really use my willpower to stop. And you know, other people can do it. I can do it. I see other people not drinking. How do they do that? I don't know, but I guess I'll do it too. But that didn't last too long. I started coming up with reasons to drink, and pretty soon I was just back at it. You know, every day, drinking. And, you know, the lying and everything else that went along with that. I was, you know, just, I didn't want to drink, and here I am drinking just like I was before. And it might, I would get ready to go to bed if, you know, I'd be like, God, how did I get so drunk again tonight? Just feeling really remorseful, and I'd wake up, or before I'd go to bed some nights, I was just so sick of myself, I'd pray that I wouldn't wake up. I just can't take another day of this. And so I'd wake up and lay in bed going, God, you know, can't believe I lived through another day of this. I was just so beat down, and I was hopeless, is really what it was. And my wife was really persuasive in that she wanted me to go to AA, and I thought she was doing it just to humiliate me. So I went to my first AA meeting, and I thought it was the worst day of my life that I would have to get to an AA meeting. Get in there, and all these people are happy and smiling and laughing, and I thought, Jesus, sucks. Get me out of here. But I stayed for the meeting. I heard about this one guy that his brother-in-law was alcoholic and had just killed himself with a shotgun. And I think that's probably the only thing I remember from in the meeting that made an impression on me. So the meeting's over, and I'm ready to get out of there and just kind of go on my way. And somebody grabbed me. They recognized that I was, you know, a newcomer. And that they wanted to talk to me. And I thought, oh, great. This guy's going to... I just didn't know what to think, but I didn't like it. And so anyway, we went outside, and he basically 12-stepped me. He told me what his drinking was like and the way it made him feel, and the way he was living his life, and you know, nothing made him thirsty like drinking a beer, and that he could, he told me about this thirst that he would have for alcohol and, you know, a bunch of other stuff that, you know, I don't remember. But that was the first time that I identified with an alcoholic. At the time, I didn't say, hey, I identified with an alcoholic. But I said, this guy knows what I feel like. And, you know, he said, this was a Thursday, he said, my home group's on at such and such a place tomorrow night. Yeah. And he didn't say, be there. He didn't say, Yeah, he didn't say anything except, you know, this is where I'm going to be. You know, I did this thing, and today I don't have to drink. And so Friday night I showed up there. I was looking for him. It's not like my life. Yeah, I've made a mess of my life. So it's not like I just showed up and everything was great. I was desperate to change. Started going to these meetings, and I started meeting some people, and somebody said, I'll be your temporary sponsor. I said, okay. I knew people were talking about sponsors. I didn't really understand what that meant. people were talking about steps, and I didn't, the mental fog had not lifted it, and I was just really, I was out of it still, I guess. So anyway, this guy said he was going to sponsor me, and I didn't really know what that meant. I started working with him. I didn't know it at the time. We were just talking one day, and he said, well, I think you've done the first three steps. I thought, well, this isn't so bad. And I tried to do a fourth step, not honestly. We didn't do it out of the book. We did it out of some other material. I guess we did a fifth step. I didn't have to say anything. He just read my list, and I had everything written in code so that if somebody else found my list, they wouldn't be able to read it. So I don't know if that's even a fifth step or not, but that's what happened. But even though I wasn't doing this stuff right, temporarily the obsession to drink had gone away, and I was awfully glad about that. And since I was feeling a little better, I wasn't really willing to do anything else with this guy. And I didn't. And this is just a few months into coming to AA. Decided that I was just going to try to get by on doing as little as possible, and that's what I did. So anyway, I am not drinking, and I'm not into any kind of solution at all, and the thought of killing myself is starting to pop into my head, I wanted to drink, but I couldn't drink because all this stuff's going on, Anyway, I had to check myself into the psych ward at Tucker's in Richmond because I thought I was going to kill myself. And they didn't keep me. They let me go. They sent me to the psychologist, and he, tripled my antidepressant medicine. I was just in another world then. So I'm going to my meetings still. I didn't stop going to meetings. And this girl was talking about how she had gone to AA my work steps or going through the book or anything, and the same thing had happened to her, that, you know, she just wanted to kill herself. And what she did was she got somebody to take her through the big book, and I identified with that. I said, oh my God, that's me. I'm not doing that, and that's what I feel, that's what I need to do. So I set about finding somebody to take me through the big book. My temporary sponsor had, he read me like a couple sentences, and that was it. And I'm not trying to blame him at all, because, you know, I'm sure he did me the same way that his sponsor did him. And, you know, I'm sure he did the best he could. So anyway, I started looking for somebody to take me through the big book, and I kind of procrastinated a little bit, and I ended up drinking a couple times, and it was... I had never felt so hopeless and depressed and doomed as the day after I drank again, you know. And so anyway, I found somebody to take me through the big book. I asked him, and you know, he was willing to do that, and he told me where to be, at what time, that we were going to go through the book. And then, you know, he's telling me about this, and I can't believe how excited I'm getting, because I can just get this vibe from him that, you know, this is going to be a great thing. And he said, this is going to change your life if you do it. And so I started going through the big book with him. Eventually I asked him to be my sponsor, and you know, we started at the front cover, and we read, you know, line by line through the book. He said, you know, when it says to pray, we're going to pray, and when it says to do stuff, we're going to do stuff. And that's what I did. So I've gone through the first three steps, done my resentment list, fifth step, six, seven, eight, started on my amends, practiced 10, 11. I talked to newcomers, so I am... I'm trying to live in the steps, and today is a lot different than it used to be. I'm no longer dogged by the drink. My wife can drink, and it just doesn't even faze me. I can't take credit for that, because I just did the things that my sponsor suggested that I do, and that's the result. I told him about my antidepressants, and he told me to go see my doctor and ask him if it was medically necessary, and I got off those. So I don't take any of that medication any longer. I can go to work and not have this incredible shyness. It's things that I would never think of doing before. Like this, standing up here. This is pretty incredible that I can stand here and do this. you know, it's got to be the steps, because this stuff wasn't possible before. It's a great thing. I've got friends now. I'm not holed up in my garage. I've got people I can call. All these people that I've harmed in the past, now that I've gone to them and made my amends, I can look them in the eye and I don't have that guilt feeling that, I have a set of principles that I can live with. I have these tools and steps that, if I get in a bad deal, I can pray, I can talk to my sponsor, I can, I can do these things that allow me to get through life relatively happy. And, things come up that, life happens, and there's always problems, but by doing the things that were suggested in this fellowship, I can live life without harming people, and it's a pretty nice thing. I'd like to thank you for inviting me out here to Madison. I appreciate it. Thank you.